The buck stops here, folks, with Wes Filer on K-Chung Radio.
Yeah, it was the Wes Filer Variety Hour, but everybody had a... Everybody's show has fucking variety.
Spirit Kid is a multi-instrumentalist and composer, currently based out of Los Angeles. His highly accessible, palatable, psychedelic pop songs harken back to the glory days of early AM rock radio, with influences such as Chuck Berry, The Beatles, The Beach Boys, and The Zombies. In addition to his composing work, Spirit Kid, also known as Amin Zerouki, has also worked for the last few years with the Harmonix Company, developing games such as Rock Band 2 and Rock Band The Beatles. He also scored the Hulu original series Resident Advisors, now available online.
This is Harlem Nocturne by the Viscounts.
The Viscounts.
Yeah, it's 50s, late 50s, 1960 maybe, something. No, it's pretty early. I feel like this almost invented the genre of, like, the late night New York saxophone.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which kind of got to be a whole other thing.
Right.
In the 80s, then, 70s and 80s.
Yeah, and then it kind of unfortunately died out. Do you think that there could be a revival? Could you see that coming in?
I think the sax is back.
The sax is back.
Yeah, the past couple of years, I think it's coming back. There's been a... This is probably too noisy. This chair.
No, the chair's great. It's great. It lets people know you're sitting.
Yeah.
By the way, Spirit Kid is sitting.
I'm sitting down, and you want to be sitting down for this, because we are in for quite a ride here, Spirit Kid.
Did you ever see this photo of Miles Davis and Kenny G? It's really funny. Kenny G's like really excited and happy and like, hey, I'm standing with Miles Davis. And Miles Davis is he's either looking at the camera or looking at Kenny G, but I think he's looking at Kenny G like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, I got this new band called Bebopalula.
Right.
That's a song by Gene Vincent.
Sure.
That we love, and we don't sound anything like that, though.
Right, kind of more. I've seen you a couple times. It's kind of more like the psychedelic pop side.
That's right.
Than anything.
That's right.
You know.
That's right. More a Magical Mystery Tour, you know, era of the world. And coincidentally, it says Bebopalula on George Harrison's guitar, on his Stratocaster guitar that he painted.
So speaking of George Harrison, I know he's been a big influence on you, and I know that you kind of gave me a little playlist here of songs that have inspired you, and maybe there's something you want to talk about here as we segue into that.
Sure, yeah, we can play this song. This is a demo, actually, he made of a song called Sour Milk Sea, available in bootleg form.
Nice.
He wrote and produced it for a person on the Apple label called Jackie Lomax, but I like this demo of his, and it's a cool song, and here's Sour Milk Sea. Thank you.
kind of the home recording stuff. I love that. I love bootlegs. I love, like, I want to hear my favorite artists, like, in a closet for, like, 3 days with a 4-track.
Yeah.
Making some really personal stuff. I love, like, that's what I love about, like, box sets and stuff like that. Like, hearing the demos and hearing the progression of that.
Yeah.
And how, especially lyrically, musically, it always seems to be kind of there. But lyrically, like, just to hear kind of people's editing processes and things like that, I find really interesting.
Yeah.
And so for you, I mean, when you're editing and when you're writing lyrics specifically, like, you know, how often do you kind of spend on a song, like, lyrically speaking?
You know, that's very interesting. You know, people say this, and I agree. It's never the same way twice.
Yeah.
Right? Never the same process. Like, maybe sometimes something will just pour out, you know, but otherwise sometimes I kind of labor over something for months and months, and
mm-hmm.
then I start to hate it. I'm like, this is annoying. I like when it just happens, you know. And you know, and one of those songs I off the last record called Dot the I, and you know, it was late in the process of getting songs together and we were recording, and this one kind of just, I don't know, it just kind of came out, and it's very short, but it has a lot of parts. Still, it kind of just came out very easily, and it's a fun one. It's very fast.
Okay.
Dot the I. All
right, Dot the I, Spirit Kid. And what's the name of the album here?
The album is called Spirit Kid Is Happening.
Spirit Kid Is Happening. Available on the internet.
The answer, I think, is at the bottom of your drink. Did you want to cause a commotion?
Reading a Jacob Dylan interview on my phone for some reason, and it was interesting. He was talking about tradition and how, like, you know, you can stay in art school, you can stay, you know, with your friends and up till 3 a.m. in art school about trying to reinvent the wheel musically, but there's something to be said for the tradition of songwriters and the tradition of certain song formats and things like that. And when I read that, I thought about you, because that's definitely something that you seem to be kind of continuing in the tradition of, and with your writing styles, and just kind of like the vibe of what of the stuff that you've done. I know that you'd be like the styles of the 60s that you still want to carry forth, but kind of with your own unique twist on it, of course.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think, you know, that era was a really exciting time because people are finally breaking away from this very traditional, I mean, which traditional is great, but, you know,
right.
this, like, 4-chord kind of doo-wop or whatever it was, you know, rock and roll bluesy stuff,
right.
which I also love a lot. But I think the excitement of, like, and the freshness of something that was brand new out of that kind of music, which is already exciting, there was something, I don't know, pretty magical about that at the time. And I think that's something I love. I just love that. I love that sound and that feeling, and you know, after that it kind of grew. I think the 70s things got a little more like rock or more stripped down. But yeah, there was this excitement about that psychedelic era, which I like to encapsulate, you know? But right, still have it be rooted in a song format, a very much song format.
Right. No 4-minute organ solos or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool too. You know, it's just a balance of that. And I think that's where the psychedelic part comes in, and production, and that plays an important role.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always thought it's an interesting balance between something that's like a good song at its core and has very interesting production, and sometimes that line gets a little blurred, and it's really cool.
Yeah. So with production and kind of what you're currently working on, I mean, I know that there's some purists out there that are saying, oh, you're going to make, you know, a 4-piece, 5-piece rock band, it's got to be on tape. You know, and then there's some other people that see the kind of production advantages of Pro Tools or Ableton or whatever DAW you're working on. So, how does that kind of, how much of the studio is an instrument to you whenever you're kind of putting together a project? Or is it more just kind of like the polish?
It's very much an instrument, very much. I have trouble turning off the production side of my brain.
Yeah.
When I'm in a studio setting, you know, just being a player, because I think about, well, how is this going to sound? You know, how is this going to fit? And a lot of it comes back to the arrangement, which, you know, is like the original production, quote unquote. I can't see this.
He's using quotation marks.
I'm using finger
loyal
quotation
listeners.
Mark. Yeah.
Yes.
Production. Arrangement.
Yeah.
Which I think is important, and it's still important to think about, because then it just makes it even stronger. But then there's a lot you can do. And I think a marriage of digital and analog is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And is pretty important, you know, nowadays. And there's purists out there, and I'm by no means a purist. I, you know, want to make things sound cool, and I enjoy the process of analog recording and tape and the limitations. I like having some sort of limitations sometimes, you know?
Right.
It just kind of sets a tone. With the analog stuff, I mean, if I were to decide, like, there's a tape machine here, and, you know, it's only got 8 tracks, for example.
Sure.
So that's your limitation kind of
right there,
right?
Right.
So either you can only have 8 total instruments or mics or whatever, you know, or you start bouncing them together, and then you deal with that's a whole other thing, right? But for example, I think that's cool. On the last Spirit Cure record, we did that to a 24 track 2-inch tape machine.
Mm-hmm.
Which was cool, and that, you know, that obviously has a certain kind of sound,
right?
But it also makes you play a certain way, because we weren't going to go back and perfect every single little drum hit and guitar.
Sure.
Like, and whatever.
So you had to be on your game.
You had to be on your game, and it makes you play a certain way, you know? And
right,
you're doing long takes, and you're not, like, punching in every little mistake and fixing it, you know? And then, also, what that means is you have a limitation of how many instruments you can keep putting on top of each other. So you have to stop at a certain point.
Right.
Or you start combining them, which in a couple of cases we did.
Yeah.
But then you can't go back. Once you do that, you're stuck.
You're stuck there.
Which is,
right.
To me, I think that's cool. Like, you know, even if it's not perfect, if you didn't get the perfect sound, but you were committed to it, then that's what the sound is now.
Yeah.
And later in mixing, you might, you know, regret it or whatever, or just be like, well, that's how it is. That's what it sounds like. And then you work with that, and I think that's really cool. Otherwise, you have too many decisions to make later when you're mixing. I like what I like, right?
Yeah.
So I like these quote-unquote vintage sounds, whatever it is. I think, you know, it's easy to go too far in that direction, and a lot of bands do, and you just keep it very lo-fi and, like, can't break out of that. And I don't like it, for me, to become a crutch of, like, oh, the song is cool because it sounds old, or, like,
yeah,
you know, it's just like totally lo-fi or whatever it is. I've done that before, and so I'm trying to like get away from that a little bit. So have some of those elements of the old stuff that I like, keeping it kind of relevant, but I don't ever want someone to listen to it and be like, oh, that's from 2015.
Yeah.
You know? I don't care about that for myself.
Yeah.
I just want it to sound good and retain qualities of music that I love.
Yeah.
Sonically and musically. And still kind of be, you know, timeless, hopefully.
Right. But that's cool that you said that about the crutch thing, that it's like, just because it sounds like it was made in a garage by, like, you know, like four guys that maybe hit the peace pipe, like, doesn't mean that. And if it's a bad song, then, you know, it's still a bad song.
Right.
A bad song will always be a bad song.
Exactly. But I love being in close proximity to my musical equipment, my studio, get an idea, bam, work on it, you know?
Right.
There's no excuse. Any time of day.
Yeah.
Sometimes we stay up till 5 a.m. working on something.
Sometimes we have to, yeah.
Sometimes we have to, as you know.
Right.
And as I know as well. And, you know, I did that recently myself because I had this idea. And I was like, I just want to do it. You know, I want to do this. And I did. And,
yeah.
I was pretty excited.
Fair enough.
But just started playing some chords. I got an idea of, like, this kind of feel I wanted. I got a chord pattern I liked. Kind of a rough melody idea in my head. Then I sat down with my notebook and just kind of wrote, and, like, you know, and I wouldn't necessarily call it poetry, but in a some sort of stanzas or free flowing, whatever it is, something, stuff that sounds nice, you know, that works.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of with that mindset. And then I'll edit it down a little bit, listen to the song, make it work, and I kind of came up with this song. It's just this interesting process that doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. And this is a brand new one. First time hearing it here. In progress, work in progress.
Work
I would say
progress.
This is not totally done, but this is a song for a new project called Bebopalula. And it goes a little something like this.
Anything maybe you want to play for us, like?
Sure, yeah. This is this band I got into a few years ago. This album came out in 2012. This band called Zeus from Toronto that we had the pleasure of playing with a couple times in Boston. And I don't know, they just do everything that I like.
Sitting in your garden room, watching the flowers grow. Tell you what's on my head. You didn't hear a thing I said. Sunrise, do it again to the glorious moonlight.
stuff here with Spirit Kids. So let's get back to maybe some more. Yeah, so in addition, I mean, I love, and I know you do too, you're big fans of ELO and their kind of, their parent group, The Move, which when I heard was, it's so interesting about that kind of era of music is that, like, you get the, like, the Time Life, like, Forrest Gump soundtrack when you're a kid, and you're like, oh, okay, cool, groovy. But then later, like, you occasionally find these great little crevices, and then you find, you know, the band like The Move, for example.
Yeah.
You know, which I know you're a big fan of. And when I heard The Move for the first time, I lost it. I thought, what have I been doing wrong? So, I mean, and with The Move, they kind of, in a way, to me, like, there's a lot of, like, pop progressive elements, lacking a better word, that it's not progressive rock in the fucking King Crimson sense, which rocks, but it's more progressive with their pop sensibilities. It's like, it's really kind of, it's interesting, the layers and tempos and just arrangements that they use.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you could talk about that at all.
Well, I like some of their stuff, you know, it is reminiscent of just more garage rock, which is kind of where they came from, I think, that kind of R&B thing. But then it gets into more, it kind of is always referential or self-referential or, you know, things like that, or just kind of straight up rock and roll, which the song I chose here for today is called California Man. Going to a party, meet me on after school. Well, we go to a place where the job is really cool. And if the band stops playing, there's a jukebox in the hall. Well, put your blue dress on. Project once together,
you and I,
speaking of limitations, where we took a four track, your four track recorder.
Yeah, my Itamaru S-Line.
Little Tascam guy or something.
Still works.
Yeah, I remember we did this together and we did two instruments at a time. I remember that's how we kind of
did it,
which was really cool.
Yeah.
And again, we worked within the limitations of the medium.
Yeah.
Because we only had four tracks to work with here.
Yeah.
So we might have bounced stuff down together. I'm not sure.
No, we didn't. And what was cool about it was, in school, I recorded a U2 concert off an old VHS from the Zoo TV tour. And it's actually, because of four tracks and the complication, it's actually where the Streets had my name live backwards in the beginning, because it was on one of the tracks.
Yeah, in the beginning, maybe the end too, I'm not sure. But you can hear a bit of that.
Yeah, I forget where it is.
You can hear a bit of that in the beginning of The Ballad of J&Y here by our band called Men at
Play.
Get to Holland and France.
And I'm just trying to think of all these. I mean, there's been a lot of great rock singers throughout the decades.
There sure have.
And one that comes to mind, I know some of you like a lot, is Van Morrison.
He's always in the moment, for sure. He does.
Bring it back to sax.
Yeah, but his voice is a very strong one, and a lot of desperation, and a lot of soul, and a lot of power, and he's just out there doing it, Van the Man.
Spirit Kid.
Well,
you have a real name.
It's a moniker of sorts, yes. But My name, yes, is Emin, E-M-E-E-N.
For sending us out, you have a track, Is This Heaven? Maybe you want to say a couple words about it, or is
this
some people
is,
just shut up and listen?
Well, they should definitely shut up and listen. And, you know, but this was kind of one I demoed on another tape machine I had. I had a four-track reel-to-reel, kind of like that one. And I wanted it pretty simple, you know, a dreamy kind of thing. And, you know, we ended up, that was a demo, it was cool. And we ended up kind of fleshing it out a little more for this recording. Did some cool tape speed manipulation on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So drums and bass are actually recorded faster and slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
So keep an ear out for that. And, you know, this is just a song about getting what you want. Is it what you wanted? Et cetera, et cetera. We've all been there. Is this heaven?
Is this heaven? Nice. All right, and again, people can find you at Emin.com or just on the internet under the Spirit Kid musical moniker.
That's right. You can do SpiritKidMusic.com. You can do Emin.com.
Alright, K-Chung Radio, that was an interview with Spirit Kid. You can find more information on Spirit Kid by searching for Spirit Kid online or at Emin Z. Spirit Kid is Emin Zarukian. He's born on March 5th, 1984 in Belmont, Massachusetts. He currently lives near the Grove, although he doesn't go there from what I'm told. Now, Grove and evicts images of lush terraces and gardens and perhaps maybe the last bookstore we'll ever know, the one and only Barnes & Noble. Now, it doesn't quite rhyme with Noble, but something that might risen from the rubble of Speedway all the way from the other side of town. We have the noble Noga.
Hi.
So, Noga, you are involved deeply with some of the local theater institutions in Santa Monica, the name of which is escaping me. What's it called?
It's the Ruskin Group Theater.
The Ruskin Group Theater. And they meet by the Santa Monica Airport, correct?
Yeah, in one of the hangars in the airport.
Okay, that's kind of cool. I mean, so what kind of stuff happens near the airport? Do you see a lot of, like, smuggling of, like, art and stuff like that? Are there a lot of kind of, does the Venus de Milo get under the cover
of
darkness?
I haven't seen, but I suspect.
You suspect?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of, I've seen some pretty drunk people get into planes and fly them away.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, everybody at Santa Monica Airport, historically speaking, has been very responsible. And so hopefully that tradition continues of excellence. So getting back to the Ruskin Theater Group, what are some of the, are there a lot of, you know, are there a lot of, there's a lot of genuine enthusiasm for the theater there?
It's a really special place.
Yeah.
There's definitely, there's a type of person that's attracted to that place, and I couldn't describe it, but you're just there, and everyone's just so special and loves that, the theater so much, and each other, and it's a very inspiring place to be around, and I'm very grateful for it.
Now, is there kind of a wise theater director? Is there somebody that has a lot of wisdom?
There's John Ruskin.
John Ruskin,
who
the namesake,
who has changed my life. He's got a lot of beautiful quotes that he's taken from other people, but in hard times I hear his voice saying those things to me in my head.
Sure.
About embracing your dark shadows and art arising out of necessity and just
Yeah, well that sounds very wise. That sounds like a that's great. I'm gonna keep that with me for a minute. So I know that you just did a thing wherein everybody directed a play and acted in a play. I was unfortunately out of town.
Oh, so
getting
that
all
was
feeding tickets in Atlantic City.
That's something
that's
really cool that happens once a month there. The third Sunday of every month, it's called the LA Cafe Plays. And at 9 in the morning, they get 5 writers, and they give them a theme, and they have a few hours. They have till like noon, I think, to write a short one-act play. And then all they're given is the theme and 2 headshots, so they know who their actors are. And then at about 1 o'clock, the actors get them. They get assigned a director, and they have until 7:30 to rehearse, memorize, block everything, put it up. And then the first show goes up at 7:30, and the second show goes up at 9, and then it's done.
Wow! And what was your theme, if you don't mind me asking?
The theme when I did it was shit. I don't even remember.
It's okay.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was my first time directing something, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I got to direct.
And how was that kind of being different, you know, from maybe being directed?
Well, I actually learned a lot from it. I think there's much less ego involved, and so I feel like I was able to get to the root of like the heart of the play much quicker, almost instantly. Was able to kind of understand it and see what it was. Whereas when you're acting, that's something that takes a long, long time to happen and a lot of rehearsal to really understand what it is that you're doing and saying.
Right.
And I think that that's because you're first and foremost thinking about yourself and how you're saying it and what you're doing and how you look and all this stuff, which is, you know, I guess it's inevitable. The goal is probably to get rid of all that, but it was cool to see to see a piece of work and not think of it in terms of myself, to be removed from it and just observe it and
right, and just kind of thinking of everybody's place within it.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's a nice stride to have. It's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
That's great. So, is there anything coming up with the Ruskin Theater?
There's actually this show going on right now that is amazing.
Oh, yeah?
It's a country musical.
Okay.
And it's all music by Paul Overstreet,
okay,
who's a Grammy Award-winning country songwriter.
That's Grammy Award-winning country songwriter.
Paul Overstreet.
Paul Overstreet, thank you.
You might be thinking, country and musical, that sounds horrible, which is admittedly what I thought in the beginning, but I saw it. I've seen it 3 times now, and it's amazing.
You love it.
It's so
That's great.
Fun, and it's wonderful music, and the acting is amazing, and it's just, like, such an entertaining, beautiful show.
Well, that's
I cried.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, is there a big ensemble? Is everybody?
It's what
does,
is it?
There's does a guy come out with like a guitar?
That's how it starts.
Okay.
The guy
that's
comes
great.
Out with a guitar and kind of starts playing, and then the actors start coming out. I think there's 7 or 8 of them, and they're pretty much on stage. The whole thing takes place in a bar, and they're pretty much on stage the whole time, all of them, and they're singing and dancing and. Yeah.
That sounds like a wonderful, wholesome evening at the Santa Monica Airport.
I highly recommend it.
And what hangar is the Ruskin Theater in?
It's 3000 Airport Avenue.
That's 3000 Airport Avenue.
And the play's called Sneaky Old Time. I guess I should say that.
The play. Thank you.
Sneaky Old Time.
Sneaky Old Time, playing at 3000 Airport Way.
Airport Ave.
Airport Avenue, also known as the Santa Monica Airport, Ruskin Theater. So, that's cool, you know, and musicals, like, so you don't like musicals?
I mean, I don't dislike them, but I would never hear a musical and rush to it.
Right, right. I saw this amazing kind of repertoire thing. You know, it's just one of those nights where I was on Hollywood Boulevard, and I go into a theater, and these two women, I guess it was a comedy show, I should say, and these two women were doing this amazing thing with flutes, where they were playing like movie hits from the early 90s, like Robin Hood and Titanic and stuff on their flutes, but they were doing this choreographed thing, like playing each other's flutes, putting the flutes behind each other's heads and stuff like that, And I thought it was something special. I thought, you know, there's such a, like every now and then you just come across something where people are just doing something that, you know, you don't really, that you forgot that, oh wait, this should be the standard. This
yeah.
should be what I expect out of things, but I forget because everything is, you know, such, a majority of the things you see are made by committee and things like that, or at least by lazy people. And such as, I was going to say something self-effacing, but I'm doing my best not to do that anymore. But so that's cool. So it seems like that country musical maybe spawned a similar thing from you, where you were seeing a genuine effort and originality.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. So let's spin the wheel, and maybe let's land on a year, and maybe you could tell me what you were doing in March of 2009. What was March of 2009 like?
March
for you?
Of 2009. Let's see. I was living in what's that neighborhood? Hancock Park.
Okay.
With a lesbian couple from Sierra Leone.
Interesting.
I rented out the bedroom to them, and I slept in the giant living room. Because there were separate entrances and it worked out and I needed a, you know, roommates. I found them on Craigslist.
Great place, by
and
the way.
Then I had met, in February, I had met these twin girls, twin women, in New York, very drunk at a party in Bushwick. And I think there might have been drugs involved. I gave them my number and said, if you're ever in California, stay with me. And come March, they took me up on my offer.
Amazing.
And so I had these psycho lesbians right. from Sierra Leone who were stealing my shit and my stuff. And these two twins, these two girls that were twins.
Set.
Identical.
Identical.
Living
right.
in with me in the living room, in the big living room. And it was... it was probably one of the hardest months of my life.
I'm glad I asked. I'm glad I...
But they actually all managed to drive me out of my own apartment. I couldn't get them out, which is what brought me to Venice.
Oh, really?
Which changed my life. So I...
So there you go.
I have to fucking thank them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'd say it's acceptable in this case because you meant it and you
yeah.
weren't trying to be cool.
Yeah,
and
or
it came
me,
from
or me.
Came from your heart.
Yeah,
right. Came from your heart, so I'd say it's all right. Yeah, so just kind of in getting involved with that, who was that guy that I met at your birthday 4 years ago? He was an older gentleman, but not too old. Maybe he was in his late 30s, early 40s. And one day he had his face painted kind of black because he was an actor. What was that guy's name?
Was that Hamilton?
It was Hamilton.
Hamilton!
Yeah.
Hamilton just last night performed in the Cafe Plays at the Ruskin. He's a wonderful
yeah.
actor.
Yeah. I remember he... So he's also involved at the Ruskin.
Yeah. His face was painted black?
I think it was a... Yeah, it definitely was. Well, it wasn't painted black. It was... There was like charcoal remnants. I think he was just... Maybe he was doing Mary Poppins... I don't know. He was just... That sounds condescending, but I'm just trying to illustrate that maybe he was performing something. And Mary Poppins is cool, so it's not that condescending. But, you know, I think he was like a chimney sweep or something, but I just... It's something I remember. But yeah, Hamilton... He's involved with the
Ruskin. I think that's who we're talking about. He had
long hair? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely Hamilton. The name rings a few bells. So, kind of moving forward now, where do you see... You know, and maybe in a few years, do you kind of see there being more, you know, kind of boutique espresso shops kind of in your neighborhood? Like how many, if you had to guess, how many gourmet espresso shops do you think could fit in between Navy and Washington west of 3rd Street? How many do you think could fit in there?
I think... We can expect at least 40.
At least 40.
At least 40. Maybe not all at the same time, but what I notice happens with these places is when one coffee shop fails, there's always someone who thinks that for some reason...
They just weren't doing it right.
They weren't doing it right.
Right.
So if I put the exact same thing in the exact same place, I'll be successful.
Right.
But
take away... Maybe like a knick-knack.
Yeah.
You know. Where there was a wooden horse, I will add a wooden fire truck.
Exactly.
You know, things like that. Just raiding an antique store. That's great. We actually met at a... We met at a coffee shop.
We met at a coffee shop.
And what I vaguely remember about that year was that you were always reading. And it was kind of cool because I remember once I looked at the Google Maps, like the street view, and you were in the street view. That's amazing that you're in the street view of a place that shall remain nameless. And you were reading, and I thought that is perfect because that's exactly what I remember about you from that first year. It's just reading in there. So what are you reading these days? Are you reading a lot or?
I just started college again, round two.
Congratulations. Where
Thanks.
Are you going?
SMC.
Great.
So, you know, I can be an aspiring actress waitressing with an English degree.
Great.
Which is actually, I say that and it sounds sarcastic, but I'm okay with it. And if that's what happens, then I think that'll be great. So I have a lot of reading to do for school. So it's a lot of short stories, and it's funny because I'm so used to hating everything I have to read for school, and I just this week realized that they're actually making us read cool stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been embracing that.
Yeah, I found that too when I went back to school in my 50s. I'm 62, by the way. And I found that, you know, I was just a different guy and than earlier, you know. And that I appreciated the work that I had to do, and I saw the value in it. I knew that it was a joke, meaning the institution and the delusions that come along with that. So it was nice to have all of those shattered dreams when you go back to college, you know, and I think it's a much more productive time.
Yeah, you know, so. I definitely feel much more better suited for... I feel a little old. Everyone's very young, but I right. also feel like I'm going to get more out of it than those little 18-year-olds.
Right.
Maybe not. Maybe they're doing the right thing and I did it wrong.
right. Yeah, I that was something I wrestled with too. And then it was funny because when I went back to school, I thought, oh, I'm really old, and I didn't tell anybody that. And I, you know, not that it really mattered, but then I remember talking to other people, be like, hey, don't tell anybody. And I would tell them my age. They'd be like, what are you talking about, man? I'm 6 months older than you. Oh, I here all this time, I thought I was this wise man, which I may or may not have been. But, you know, wisdom is wasted on the quiet, that's for sure. I found that out. So you just started playing the guitar.
Yeah.
And you played me a song out in the parking lot. You don't have to go too into the details because Noga has a bit of a crush. We don't have to talk about it.
Yeah.
But it does seem that you're learning a lot. You're getting some lessons. You know, you got the D down, you got the E minor down, and just kind of how's that going for you?
That's I'd say it's the most. It's something that I never even considered doing because it was always something I'd love to do, as I loved guitar and I loved writing and music and all that stuff, but. I never really played any instruments, and I'm 26 years old, and that feels kind of old, and I just always figured, like, it was too late for me to learn anything, and so picking that up and just seeing, not that I'm any good yet, but every day I get better, and that's kind of changed my whole view on my life, 'cause I feel like, as silly as it is, like, if I can learn to play the guitar, I can do anything. And right. that anyone can do anything. And I've never felt that way. I always thought it was just a stupid thing people told you, and
right.
they should go to hell.
Right. They should get a job.
Get a job, yeah.
Right.
Like only people with money go on about how money doesn't matter. And it's like, well, you have money, so
yeah.
shut up.
Yeah. What's like the... Have you ever gotten a paycheck and then... spend it on something legal and just immediately thought, why did I do that? Like, have you ever had that with money? Keeping it legal now.
Yeah. Spend it on something legal and thought, what? Nothing comes to mind. It's mostly just food.
Yeah.
Food and, yeah.
One time when I was 20, I got paid $100 to clean a closet in the office of a magazine. And I got a chair out of it, which is pretty cool. But like an old office chair, you know, like looked like it could have been in like Die Hard or something like that. I was pretty excited about it. But so I cashed the paycheck and I went and I bought a Slurpee and I put it on the roof of this car I was driving in the wind because I thought it'd be cool to like break a $100 bill with a Slurpee. And which it was, and then the wind came and knocked the Slurpee off the car, and I just thought, like, what have I done, you know? I felt horrible. It made me feel bad for some reason.
Yeah.
But then I bought the ELO box set, and that was a pretty good afternoon. So, we discussed ELO with Spirit Kid earlier. to all the loyal K-Chun listeners that have spotted that.
Wes, you one time came by the garage and...
Noga used to live in a garage, but it was a nice garage.
It was a
and
nice
I came
garage.
By one. Okay, go ahead.
You came by one day with this little tiny keyboard and you played this... you played Turn to Stone.
Yeah.
By ELO, very slowly. And it was one of the most beautiful things. And actually, that experience was one of the things that made me wish I could play music. I wished I could have done to Turn to Stone what you had done to Turn to Stone. It was so beautiful.
Thank you. Turn to Stone is...
I think of it often. I think of that moment often.
Well, it's E major, F major, or F sharp major to F sharp minor, to A minor to B major. It's a great chord progression. I don't have it here, or do I? I don't. I'm sure it's on some cassette tape that's very appropriately labeled. Good music, number 9, like I'm looking at over here. I'm sure that's it. Or Richard Drug music. It may even be on the Beach Boys tape that's labeled over here. There's a lot of great things. So why don't we hear a song from Whitney Houston real quick. So let's maybe we could ask. I can ask you some questions about this. So what do you feel when you hear this song?
What do I feel? I feel a woman with this energy inside of her.
Right.
That this very manic kind of ball of energy, and one day she didn't even know what to do with this ball of energy. She didn't even know it was there until this song came to mind, and this crazy ball of energy was just channeled and all her longing and everything just poured out.
Yeah, I love this song. I think a lot of times people might ironically like this, but I personally love it. So we hung out in Philadelphia once, and you met my old drummer, great man named Brad Elliker, and I was just there and I was just hanging out with him, and I found this CD of our 10th grade jazz band recital, and I heard this and I knew from memory.
You have it here?
I'm about to play it.
Oh my god.
But what was funny about it was it wasn't like jazz. It was more like kind of like Muzak elevator music versions of like Jump, Jive, and Whale and
jazz
stuff.
Jazz renditions?
Yeah. Or like swing, you know, but it was a tribute to swing because it was 99. So it was like swing. It was like a swing revival of the late 90s. But I found this non-swing drum solo by BJ and I thought I wanted to play it for you. And just maybe.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. This is not it. So this is the beginning. I'm gonna be skipping through this.
What are you on in this?
I'm playing the bass guitar.
Wow.
Yeah, I was pretty excited. It was a 63P bass. It's a little out of tune. Kind of holding it down. Can't really hear it. it's pretty nice. It sounds like an old AM radio station call signal thing, like K5 or KFO5, 12:10 AM. You know, like that's what it reminds me of.
I love it.
But let me get to the drum solo. Oh, that was after somebody's sax solo. Here's the sax solo.
The crowd loves it.
I have no idea who this is. Here's the solo. That's pretty awesome. That is awesome.
That is awesome.
That is awesome. And it was just great because it was in this thing and just how, yeah, we...
Having met BJ, it's...
Right. That's why I thought I'd play it for you.
Everything makes sense now.
Right. So is there anything else you'd like to add on top of this interview here? I see that we're running over the time limit.
No, I just... This has been really fun.
It has been fun.
It's been nice to catch up with you, and this K-Chung Radio is really rad.
It is pretty rad.
I wish you guys could see in here.
Well, chances are the people listening have all been in here. I think that's the only one that... Though we're reaching out and we're doing good. We raised some money with... We had a Pear Space residency recently, and that... We've done well with that, so maybe let's send us out with the Jump Jive and Whale from the jazz band concert. And where was the name of the theater again? Maybe just
plug Ruskin Group Theater.
Ruskin Group Theater.
Go check it out. Sneaky Old Time is playing there, the country musical. Fridays and Saturdays evenings and Sunday matinees, and then the cafe plays are every third Sunday of the month at 7:30, and then again at 9:00.
Fantastic, and thank you again, Noga Van Leeuwen.
Thanks for having me, Wes.
Yeah, so we're gonna send you out with Jump, Jive, and Whale from the 1999 Northern High School Jazz Band.